Thank you for calling the California Department of Public Health Vital Records. Your call may be monitored for quality assurance purposes.
We'll do a thing called freedom.
You gonna press the flesh, Pappy? Do a little politicking?
I'll press you up and get you.
You little son bitch. You don't tell your Pappy how to cut the electorate. We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Warning. You're listening to the Agenda 31 podcast with Corey Ibe and Todd McGreevy. Agenda 31 exposes government fraud, theft, and deception. Agenda 31 endorses peaceful enforcement of the Bill of Rights by the people of the several states. Agenda 31 explains how United States citizens have forsaken their capacity to protect their own rights. Corey and Todd engage with local, state, and federal government on powerful issues of identity, property rights, law, oaths of office, taxation, privacy, and more. Their approach is rooted in the very specific legal foundation of state citizenship. Listeners of the Agenda 31 podcast are challenged to take the lowest risks with the highest rewards. Your hosts want to know, what's your strategy to make a difference? Due to the unique division of political authority in the United States, U.S. citizens are residents in every state and should not attempt to copy the strategies employed by the hosts of the Agenda 31 broadcast without first consulting legal counsel. Enjoy!
You are going to change America in a way that usually only war and fluoride can. War and fluoride can. War and fluoride can.
It's time for us to become private central banking heretics, to stop believing that this is the way life is supposed to be, because it isn't.
The courts said that there are clearly two governments in each state. We have a state government and a federal government. The state government that we see today is a franchise of the federal government, as I mentioned before, by voluntary consent of the people, but that doesn't mean the original state government doesn't exist.
Self-determination isn't for everybody.
Well, that's exactly the whole point. The 14th Amendment protects U.S. citizens from the several states, but provides no protection from the federal government.
U.S. citizens have several different qualities. One, under Title V, they're considered federal personnel. You can trace back the foundation of their identity to a document the government owns.
Wake up! A state-issued birth record is government property.
You know what? There's going to be 50 different ways to skin this cat.
Today, we don't know. We're like the hotel that checks you in but never checks you out.
That's not courage. That's a mafia-style sit-down and divvy up what's good for the bosses.
You know, you're going to have to shut up or I'm going to have you arrested.
Hey, how does it feel to be a Republican right now?
It's a hoax. It's a big hoax.
It's a little bit overreaching to think there's going to be 3,100 people trying to pay attention like we do.
Why don't we devalue Social Security numbers? Why not require financial institutions not to use Social Security numbers so that there's no longer the incentive to steal Social Security numbers?
The Social Security number is absolutely critical. We need them and we have to use them. But we have to treat them as an identifier.
Yes, we'll make slaves out of all of you.
Very much part of Agenda 21, in my humble opinion. And it's a ramp up to a United Nations September convention that's coming. It's going to be Agenda 21 on steroids.
Yeah, California is crazy.
It is.
I mean, it's out of control.
The U.S. sitting senator is suggesting using RICO laws to be applied to global warming skeptics.
We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. No, we don't have a military-industrial complex.
Only a state citizen can travel around without license plates, without registration, and without a driver's license, and not intend to break the law.
Because you can't have prosperity if you're constantly under the risk of a terrorist attack.
Who the government? Who the terrorists?
In the morning to you, Corey.
Greetings, Todd. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Agenda 31. You're tuned into the lowest risk, highest reward podcast in the universe. And today is Saturday, November 12th, 2016. And this is episode 106 of Agenda 31. And this is your co-host, Todd McGreevy, being joined by
Corey Ibe, waving a hand from within the posted city limits of Los Angeles.
And it's a beautiful day here in Scott County, Iowa, overlooking the banks of the Mississippi River. And I this is one of the first albums I ever bought, Corey. Rolling Stones, Tattoo You.
Nice.
I just think this song is so appropriate to the aftermath of the recent United States federal national corporate elections.
Yes. Yes, the federal elections. The federal selection.
The federal selection, yes. There's no use in... There's a lot of people crying, Corey. A lot of people crying.
Well, I think no matter how this turned out, there was going to be a lot of people crying.
This is true. This is true. We had the U.S. federal citizens had a choice between a douche and a turd, as we've played many times before the South Park episode. I've rephrased that into the corruptibles and the deplorables, is how I've looked at that. There's some fascinating information to share with regards to the post-election dynamics, and one of the first things I'd like to bring up, if you will, is some clips that we played weeks and weeks ago, right after the Republican National Convention, when Trump was given the nomination by the party, which in and of itself was a huge coup and a big thumb, you know, thumbing the nose of the establishment. It was a major deal.
Oh man, it really was.
It was something to behold, and we all know the story that the media is against him and so forth. And one of the things I want to touch on briefly is globalism versus national sovereignty, essentially, or the United States sovereignty versus globalism. And let me pull this up here. I don't know if you remember at the RNC, when Trump finally spoke at the end of it, it was a big, long, drawn-out process, the Republican National Convention. His daughter introduced him, but the person who introduced his daughter was a guy named Tom Barrack. Not to be confused with Barack Obama, but Tom Barrack. Do you remember this guy?
I don't, no.
Yeah, he's an Armenian-American real estate mogul, longtime friend, and he gave and his full speech is totally worth listening to. It's really good insight into Donald if you consider one of your best friends having insight into you as an individual. He did a great job, in my humble opinion. And there's tells. Effectively, we get out of these long speeches, there's moments where the crux of the matter is really put on the table. And I think Tom Barrack did that with regards to this globalism versus Americanism dynamic. And I want to remind listeners to compare, you know, what did his best friend say about globalism, and then what did Trump say about globalism, and what should we expect now moving forward after this?
Look, we're at a tipping point. The world is a mess. This necklace of globalism that we've all talked about has crumbled and shattered into 1,000 shards. It needs a jeweler to take each of those jewels one by one, starting with America, its own diamond, and polish it. Then slowly find seamless strength, put them all back together so that what we look at is the necklace of prosperity and tolerance around the world.
I took that to mean he was all for globalism, that we that America would be at the center of the global world order.
Interesting. I'll have to digest that a little bit more, because hearing it now, I do recall hearing that.
Yeah.
But hearing it now, post-election, I actually take it a little bit different.
Let's play it one more time.
So look, we're at a tipping point. The world is a mess. This necklace of globalism that we've all talked about has crumbled and shattered into 1,000 shards. It needs a jeweler to take each of those jewels one by one, starting with America, its own diamond, and polish it. Then slowly find seamless strength, put them all back together so that what we look at is the necklace of prosperity and tolerance around the world.
there was a little hiccup in that clip, and I was just, that was the best I could find out there. I don't know if it was
right
on the board at the event, or, you know, I don't know, but I don't know if it was post edited. I'm not sure what was hiccuped there, but I found that to be a pretty striking statement with regards to the view of his best friend and introduction of his daughter at this event. And then Trump came on, and one of, amongst many of the things he said this.
Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo as long as we are led by politicians who will not put America first. Then we can be assured that other nations will not treat America with respect.
Americanism, not globalism. So at the time, I saw this as incongruous, incompatible statements between the two. I didn't think...
I think I did too, but now I take it a little bit different hearing that again.
Okay. Please share.
Just that... You have an intercourse of nations. The globalism has gone in and just destroyed nation after nation after nation. I mean, that's really what's happened. And I kind of take that as, you know, starting with us here and polishing that one diamond and then putting other nations back together is not necessarily globalism, but empowering each nation to be able to... exist amongst a family of nations under their own sovereignty. That's kind of how I take that the second time around hearing it.
That would be ideal. That would be different than nation building, I think. I'm not sure. I mean, we had a Republican president come in and say, I'm not going to be a nation builder. That was W. And of course, you know, after 9/11 became a total Halliburton-driven presidency.
Well, I don't think you can call what he did nation building. Nation destroying,
well,
I think, is very...
Well, you rebelize it first, then you go in with your vice president's company, Halliburton, and rebuild it.
Yeah.
You build up the dams, you build up the power structure. You know, it's the economic hitman model all over with bombs instead of banknotes.
Well, the physical structure of it, yeah, they rebuilt it, but the intrinsic... nation referring to the people, I think the goal was to just destroy it, decimate it, and absolutely control it. So in that sense, I don't think there was any nation building going on as far as empowering the people. It was just building infrastructure that they would then, you know, protect the infrastructure from those inhabitants of the nations.
And of course, you know, what does any of this have to do with what we talk about on Agenda 31, this being globalism versus Americanism? It has a lot to do with it. Agenda 31 is a riff off of the term Agenda 21, which is the global initiative started out of the United Nations for sustainable living, smart growth, social justice, economic justice, control of behavior, control of resources from the top down at a global level under the auspices of sustainability. And that would be, the acronym ICLEI, the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives. Remember that, ICLEI?
Oh, yeah. Yes. You know,
that would be like one of the tentacles of Agenda 21, where cities or counties would sign off on a charter under ICLEI, and they would literally make themselves subservient to a foreign global set of standards that the local people didn't have anything to do with, just because the leaders signed up for ICLEI because it made them feel good and they could get grants from the Department of Energy because they were part of ICLEI or something like that. That was and the result of that is realized in policymaking, zoning, laws, soft law at your local level with regards to housing, with regards to whether you can grow a garden in your yard, with regards to how far you can, what kind of density of housing can be somewhere, with regards to close to workplaces, the way transportation decisions are made with regards to public transportation. It's pervasive throughout where you live if you're not paying attention to it.
Yeah, but they love to say that it's non-binding.
Right, right. Yeah, it being signing on to Agenda 21.
Right, yeah. Right.
I got to remember to pull that clip of Mark Potok speaking on C-SPAN one time when he was trying to cast aspersions against critics of Agenda 21. He went into all that. That was classic. I don't know if you remember that guy or not. He used to be with the Southern Poverty Law Center.
I have a really good memory. It's just short.
he was classic. I'll never forget it when he came on. I'll try and pull it up for another show.
You know, it's always amazing to me. We talk about Agenda 21, and nobody really denies that Agenda 21 was a real program, and now it's morphed into Agenda 2030. But it wasn't that long ago that if you mentioned Agenda 21, you were labeled a conspiracy theorist. You were a nut job. There was no such thing as this global control of resources through the UN. It's just fascinating to me how it's become mainstream, and it doesn't even, people just don't even bat an eye at it yet. I remember trying to tell people about Agenda
20. Uh-oh. I lost you, Corey. We lost him.
Huh.
You there now?
Yeah, I'm
cool.
I haven't changed.
You remember telling people about Agenda 21 and...
Well, that's interesting. Bring up Agenda 21 and my audio goes down.
Yeah.
just that Agenda 21, not that long ago, I remember, you know, telling people about Agenda 21 and how dangerous it is. And it was the idea of making a small group of people in control of the entire global resources. And people would, I was labeled a conspiracy theorist. People just wouldn't even look at it. They're like, oh, that's nuts. Prove it. Where's your proof? There's no such thing. America, our politicians would never let that happen. It's mainstream. I mean, it's just amazing. Now it's morphed into Agenda 2030. But I just, every time we talk about Agenda 21, I feel a little bit vindicated to those that, you know, kind of laughed at me. Like the way people laughed at Ann Coulter when she originally said that she thought Donald Trump on, I think it was on CNN, she thought Donald Trump had the best chance of winning the election.
Yeah, and
have you seen that clip?
Ann Coulter?
Yeah, Ann Coulter. She was a guest on CNN on a panel, and they all went through and said, this was early on in the election, and they asked, who do you think has the best chance of being president? And of course, everybody on the panel said Hillary Clinton, except for Ann Coulter, and she said, hey, at this point, I think Donald Trump. And the entire studio audience, everybody just laughed at her, mocked at her, looked at her like she was nuts. And I kind of sympathize with that when I used to talk about Agenda 21 being a real problem.
Right, right. That makes sense. You know, and I misspoke. It wasn't Potok. It was Eichenwald is the gentleman's name.
Oh, I remember that name.
And I just found the clip. This is random, just off the cuff here. I did not prep for this. Let's see what this sounds like here.
And what are some of the conspiracy theories that you think are causing some of the most harm in this country right now?
Well, one of the worst is the conspiracy theory about Agenda 21. And, you know, I can tell you right now, I said those words, and there are people all over the country reaching for their phones. Because what that one is a belief. Agenda 21 is a non-binding agreement that was signed during the original George Bush administration back in the early 1990s, in the UN, saying that the countries would make, you know, were making a commitment to basically to care for the environment, basically to act in ways that preserved the environment, allowed for, you know, things in terms of planning, in terms of urban development, blah, 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 blah. Nothing.
There's a journalist, blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah, blah.
Big. It's a non-binding commitment. This has become a belief in an overarching conspiracy of a new world order that is trying to seize private property in the United States, to grant trees the rights of humans, to, there are actually people saying they're going to shuffle us off all onto train cars and send us to work camps. I mean, it's crazy stuff. But when you look at it, there are zoning commissions in the United States, local county zoning commissions, that can't get anything done. You can't get bike paths built. You can't get, you know, modest, normal zoning development done because people come out screaming that it's about Agenda 21. And, you know, there are zoning commissions There's one I mentioned in the article where nobody in the Zoning Commission knew what Agenda 21 was. They had spent years on a zoning plan. They couldn't do it, and so they all resigned. Because it was, why do this job if we can't do it when we're faced with people who are talking about craziness?
That's because the staff of that county where the zoning commissioner served knew exactly what Agenda 21 is. And I mean, I have firsthand evidence of that in my own county. So, but his reference to New World Order just only bears playing this just one more time here.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
So Mr. Eichenwald was castigating those of us who were concerned about a new world order, claiming it was a conspiracy theory when George W. Bush, H.W. Bush himself espoused it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the reason we bring this up is that with the new regime, the Trump regime, we need to be vigilant. And this is an opportunity for those that are disenfranchised by Orange is the New Black to be on guard.
Absolutely. And he mentioned the bike paths, that you couldn't get bike paths passed.
Yeah.
There are some good things that have come out of Agenda 21. That's what makes it dangerous. It's kind of like saying, there's a burglar in town. He's going to steal a whole bunch of your stuff, but there's some poor people that he's going to give some of that stuff to.
Right.
It might be good giving poor people food or bread out of your cabinet or something like that, but not when it's a burglar that comes and takes it. And one of the things that I'm actually a big fan of that has come out of the Agenda 21 program here in Los Angeles is changing the way bike paths work on the roads. I don't know if they have that in your area, but what they're doing, you know, it used to be that you'd have cars park all the way to the side against the curb, and then to the left of the car is a bike path. So the bicycle rider is in between parked cars and traffic. They could get hit by a car or by an open door. Yeah. So what they do is they move the cars over and put the bike path up against the curb. And now the parked cars create a barrier from traffic. I think that's brilliant, but I don't
What about opening a door? Boom.
What's that?
What about opening a passenger door and just clocking the biker?
Well, there's enough room to...
Oh,
actually,
really?
In most cases, there's enough room to open a door.
Okay.
And what they do is they put these little, at least in a few areas here in LA, they've put these little not temporary, they're kind of bend over type poles, little plastic poles that stick on the ground. And if you run over them, they just bend over. So what you do is you park up against those and it would prevent people from just swinging a door open. But cool. I think it's fantastic. It's just a no brainer. It's what that's associated with.
Well, you didn't need Agenda 21, to have some common sense about bikes.
Exactly. You don't need Agenda 21 for common sense, local regulations.
Yeah. It's funny you bring up the
bicycle. Did I just say common sense local regulation? What the heck is wrong with me this morning?
Wow.
Oh, I must have accidentally put Kool-Aid in my coffee.
Yeah, it happens, I guess. it's funny you bring up the biking thing. There's a piece at thefreethoughtproject.com. I'm going to put a link to it in the chat room here for everybody. And it's talking about, hold on one second. There it is. Boom. And it's a speed trap. California cops to check bicycle speed with radar and ticket fast bikers. This is in Marin County. Have you heard about this?
Oh, they do that in California. They do that here in Huntington Beach.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You can get a moving traffic violation for doing more than, I think it's 5 miles an hour on a bike in certain areas.
And do you have to have a piece of plastic in order to get that citation? A plastic identity card?
Well, you would have to have a plastic identity card in order to qualify for a citation. I don't know. That's, I hadn't thought of that, but that's interesting.
I mean, you're riding your bike, you got your short, you know, your swimming trunks on and a Frisbee and you're going to the beach.
Well, all over Torrance now, there's places in LA where if you're riding your bike at night and you don't have a light on your bicycle, they can pull you over. There's so many videos of people on bikes getting pulled over, thrown over the top of a cop car, searched. They have their bikes confiscated. They treat them like, a bicycle qualifies as a, maybe not as a motor vehicle, but the way that they've done things. I mean, you put a light on the bike and cops can just say that light's not bright enough and they'll give you a ticket, and it's expensive,
man.
Yeah. It's nuts.
Wow.
You just go on YouTube, type in, I bet if you type in Torrance bicycle, you'll see it. I mean, it is all over the place. If you're riding a bike at night in towns here south of LA, you are likely to get pulled over and harassed. I mean, it is massive the amount of force that the police come up with. And they claim that a lot of criminals are riding bicycles.
Damn, that's crazy. That,
yeah, it's nuts.
More discretion. Circling back to the election and ain't no use in crying, stay away from me model. You sent this note to me, or this link to this video by this gal, and her name is Carrie Wedler, CareyWedler, Carrie Wedler. And you sent me a link to her Facebook page, and I'm going to go pull it up here again. And her Twitter handle is at Carrie Wedler, and her cover page shows her hand painting Ron Paul revolution signs. So that got,
yeah, pretty
attention.
Cool.
Yeah. But this, I don't think I could sum up this is a 4-minute and 15-second, little montage that she did. And I think it speaks for itself.
Dear liberals, now I know you're really upset about Donald Trump's victory, and I'm sure you want to blame it on racism and hatred and sexism and maybe Russia and definitely ignorance. But the truth is, we need to have a talk. As a former liberal, I can tell you something. It's time to take a look in the mirror. You were doing okay during the Bush administration when you protested war and privacy invasions, among other things. But then you went and did exactly what I did when I was an Obama supporter.
I sat back for the next couple years and figured I'd let you handle all that change because you're the one that was selling it anyway.
You started rationalizing injustice because Obama took office. And instead of doing what he told you to, being active and involved, you simply chose to close your eyes and ears and pretend he was an ideal progressive president. But now that chicken has come home to roost because people continued to suffer under the Obama administration. Not Goldman Sachs, not the corporations he empowered, and not TPP beneficiaries. Corporate America thrived, but working class Americans who also expressed support for Sanders, who you cast aside, have spoken. Even in the face of Obama leaving office and the very real possibility of a Trump presidency, you still couldn't be bothered to care about the corruption and crime that legitimately upset Trump supporters and the rest of us. You rationalized Hillary Clinton's war crimes and ignored her weapons deals to countries that oppress women and gays and murder innocent civilians in Yemen. You justified oligarchic rule because Trump was mean. You sat on your high horse and blamed everyone but yourselves. And while his rhetoric is absolutely dangerous, and I too could be on the chopping block as a journalist and vocal dissenter, for all your claims of tolerance and love and compassion, you failed to seek the real reasons Trump rose to power. Yes, bigotry and xenophobia are definitely issues, but there's something much deeper going on here. People are terrified by terrorist attacks, which are direct results of foreign policy, including Obama's and Hillary's. Don't believe me? Here, listen to the Orlando shooter explain himself.
Innocent women and children are getting killed in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, okay?
I understand that. You're upset about the bombing in Syria and Afghanistan, and you want the bombing and the killing to stop.
Many Trump supporters might not fully understand the concept of blowback, but considering you view yourselves as so rational and sane, take it for what it is. You allowed this to happen while you kicked your feet up, put flowers in your hair, and pretended Obama was a savior and stopped paying attention. Then there's economic hardship, which drove working-class Americans to desperation and drove immigrants from south of the border, also in desperation, to the United States looking for opportunities. And guess what? Hillary contributed to both of these issues. We all know she's a war hawk. Iraq, Libya, Syria, and her fervent support of drones much. And she has long advocated top-down trade agreements. And had she won, you would have continued to ignore all of this because your party was in power, and you would have continued to wonder why the Trump crowd was so upset. You and the media mocked them and condescended to them and thought of every reason they supported him than the glaring truth. Decades of unjust authority and not being heard. Even if not all of them fully understand the reasons behind terror attacks and immigration, they know something is wrong. But that's neither here nor there, because Donald Trump will be president. Now you're horrified by all the awful things Trump could do, and you probably aren't even aware of all the precedents Obama set for Donald Trump to seize more power once he's in office. The caging of whistleblowers and journalists, the killing of American citizens, and the legalization of their indefinite detention without trial. Unaware of these things? Then maybe you shouldn't have been voting and jamming your political beliefs down our throats. And though Trump isn't going to save us and is going to abuse power in his own way, there's a reason the symbol of the establishment lost. And you have no one to blame but yourselves. If you're angry and sad, channel that palpable feeling into real compassion and tolerance. Try to understand how half the country would have felt if a corrupt, lying warmonger had gotten into power. Doesn't feel very good, does it? Maybe it's time to question the system that allows millions of people to dominate millions of other people with the flick of a pen. So I'm really looking forward to your renewed active engagement now that someone other than a Democrat will be president, because maybe we can use it to bring some actual peace and accountability to this country. Welcome back to the resistance, bitches.
That was pretty good.
I've brought up nearly every one of those topics in the last month, but never compressed them into 4 minutes straight. She did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, she did.
I loved it. And a couple of terms that, you know, that triggered me. I think I need my safe space, Corey, was blowback. She brought up the term blowback. And as you recall, many of us recall that we're Ron Paul fans, When he first ran for president, and Giuliani was on the stage with him during the debates, and he brought up the term blowback. Remember, Rudy tried to take him out, you know, say that he was, you know, doing the bidding of the terrorists and so forth. Do you remember this?
That's right. Yeah.
And you know, Ron Paul, you know, I can't remember the exact verbiage, but it was like, we need to get Rudy some books and have him read up on some things, or, you know, something like that. I mean, the media made it kind of a seminal moment for like pushing Ron Paul aside because Rudy tried to do a smackdown when he brought up blowback. So that's important to remember because Rudy is right by the side of Trump right now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Rudy, you know, the one who famously said, pull it. Regarding Building 7.
Right.
Right? All right. So that's the guy that, so this, you know, those of us who are enjoying, for lack of a better term, the fact that Hillary isn't in power, and I'm going to talk about that word power in a second, are not relishing Chris Christie and Rudy Giuliani sitting around Trump planning what this gal importantly pointed out was, you liberals were too asleep at the wheel to understand Barry set up all kinds of additional executive authority powers that Trump can drive a truck through now and make it even worse.
Yeah. Well, Trey Gowdy gave a great speech to that point that, you know, Obama's not going to be in power forever. And all of these, you know, laws and policies and things that go against the ideals of the American Constitution, the people who are espousing that today will then plead for law and order to be put back in place when somebody else that they don't like is in power and now has access to this huge expansion, which I don't think the term expansion is actually the right word. The president has always had these powers over the jurisdiction that that entails the United States. And so he just has used it because they're with the 14th Amendment and people adopting federal citizenship, there was kind of this unwritten agreement that the president would not make unconstitutional executive orders when, in fact, they're all, for the most part, they are constitutional. They just only apply to the United States. If you don't like it, get out of the United States.
And by getting out of the United States, you were talking about the federal United States, not one of the several states. You're talking about the homogeneous overlay that is the 50 franchises and subdivisions of the federal government.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an important distinction to make, and it's a good segue into one of the projects we're working on, and that is a primer, a video primer for people new to these topics that we're talking about here. And I don't know if we should we play that one that you set up?
Sure, yeah, let's play it.
Yeah, let me pull it up here. Go ahead and intro it a little bit, why you're doing this while I pull this up, please.
Well, as I was working on this, they're from a listener to a fan of the show, and I get lots of questions. You get lots of questions. We have questions that come in through info@agenda31.org about certain things. People challenge us on concepts, which is great. We love it. But we're repeating the same thing over and over again individually. And the idea is to put together a video that somebody who's new to the Agenda 31 broadcast and, you and I know when I'm saying get out of the United States, we're not talking about leaving the country. We're talking about leaving the only place that's not free within the country, which is Washington, D.C. And that's a concept that a lot of people are not familiar with. And a lot of people who are even in government are not familiar with. I was in a Twitter exchange with somebody who was an independent running for Congress and explained how the power is. And she just responded. Well, they just responded by saying that that's pretty ridiculous. And nobody's going to overturn it because we've been doing it this way for so long. And it was kind of interesting how people are just not aware of the different meanings of the term United States and the different jurisdictions. So, a video intro would be an idea to help people get up to speed without going through 106 episodes to try and learn everything. And something that would be very helpful is to have people submit a question that should be addressed for a new listener to the show or a new fan of Agenda 31. That should be included in that video. And we'd like to have the participation of, our fans and listeners and have them be a part of that video. So I posted this yesterday.
I'll play this clip right before I do, though. It's on YouTube at Corey Ibe's channel, which is just Corey Ibe, all one word, Coreyeib. And they're playing ads. So hopefully you're generating some revenue from the ads they're playing, Corey, on your channel.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, I don't know if you got that set up enough or not, but it's probably worth doing. The ad that played is from the Esteemed Lawyers of America. That's the ad that played before this. So they're paying attention to some of the content, it would seem.
That's interesting.
Hey, this is Corey from the Agenda 31 show. Todd and I are working on an introduction video to agenda31.org, and we need your help. If you're a fan of the show, you know it's one of the most information-dense podcasts on the internet. We're the only show dealing with how to put an out-of-control federal government back in its District of Columbia box by averring and maintaining Article 4 citizenship. For a new listener, this can sometimes be overwhelming, and we think a short video that will help cover some of the concepts could be very helpful. Now, if you have an idea of a question that should be addressed in the video, please record yourself, say your name, the city and state of where you're from, ask the question, and then post it to YouTube. Set the privacy settings on that question to unlisted, and then send a link to the video to info@agenda31.org. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you at the next show.
I like that little stinger at the end. I'm sorry, I stepped on it. Let me replay
that. That's all right.
Yeah, let's play that stinger. Hold on a second. You had a little animation of the logo, which is pretty cool.
They exercise strict control over us.
Oh, man. That was pretty cool. I like that. And then you also did, and we this is a sincere invite. I mean, send us info, send a link to a recorded question, and we'll make some hay with it and try and inform new listeners. You also did this other one with this puppet again.
Yeah, another puppet. Yeah, video, that's just the hello. That's going to be the intro, and I think to make it easy, I some of the people that I really respect gave me some ideas on how to present this and to keep it in the mindset of presenting it to a seventh or eighth grade class. Is the most enjoyable way to handle very deep subjects. So Sometimes I get, you know, lost in my own little bubble here, thinking everybody knows what you and I have discussed for years now, and it requires kind of simplifying it a little bit, because these concepts, given that all of us are subjected to a massive amount of propaganda from you know, the day we're born, we're subjected to this propaganda. It is confusing. It's confusing to the human mind to get a, you know, an idea that is incongruent with a deeply held belief. So to approach that with a very simple manner, I decided to use a puppet to introduce the video.
Hello, fans of Agenda 31. I'm Professor Hans von Puppet. Welcome to Corey and Todd's introduction video. Each week, Todd and Corey produce an information-packed podcast you can find at www.agenda31.org. To get the most out of the Agenda 31 show, you need a good grasp of basic concepts, and Corey is about to cover a few of those in just a moment. Some of these concepts may be new to you, so be sure to verify everything before engaging with government. Telling a judge you heard something on Agenda31.org is not a legal defense. Corey and Todd are not experts, and they are not attorneys. They are people just like you, working very hard to put an out-of-control government back in its District of Columbia box. They need your support to keep this show going, so be sure to subscribe, support, and share the Agenda 31 podcast with your friends. Words are tricky things, and government likes tricky things, especially homographs. A homograph, what is that? It's two words that sound the same and are spelled the same, but have different meanings. Government is notorious for using homographs to confuse, so pay close attention, because Corey is about to describe a few of those homographs right now. Get your pencils ready and take notes. Here is Corey from California.
And Corey, what is a homograph? Well, give us an example of a homograph, please.
Well, space in space. That's an example of a homograph. If I said, hey, Todd, do you have any space in your garage that I could store some of my stuff? You know, I would not be, you know, asking if the, you know, a place that's void of an atmosphere and exists in between Earth and Mars, or is a Lagrange point somewhere far outside of the sun, in between the sun and one of the planets. You would know that that's not what I'm talking about, because we are familiar with that type of a homograph. You would know that, hey, just do you have any room in your garage? Another example is the term United States. The term United States has multiple meanings, but it's spelled the same every single time. And if government can get you to believe that when you use the term United States in a specific setting, that it means, you know, all of them together, you're looking at a picture on a map, and that's what the term United States means. But in fact, you're in an arena where the term United States only means the District of Columbia, then the government has a huge advantage. And that's probably the biggest, most common homograph that the government uses, whether it's a, you know, whether it's used openly in a case or it's just assumed. It's always interesting to me how many people tell me that I'm ridiculous for saying that in certain cases the term United States can mean just the District of Columbia, and the power that seat of government represents. It's just fascinating to me how often people will tell me that I'm on glue. I mean, they might not be wrong about the glue part, but they're wrong about the they're wrong about the use of the homograph. And that's one of, I think, the most important concepts to understand.
Well, I really like that. I'll embed that video of the Professor von Puppet. Is that his name?
That's just the name that I threw out there.
Yeah,
it was cool. Some talent that I hired.
I like it. It's well done. And
hey, well, that's the talent that that was paid for was from donations that we got to the show. So,
absolutely,
really appreciate that.
Well, and shall we talk about that? Do you have any updates on that?
Well, we do, and I am woefully prepared on that. I've been so bad about that. I can, I tell you what, I'll work on it on the show, and towards the end, I'll have that.
It's one of those things. It's the garden that grows is the one that we tend, unfortunately. And that being the donations, we do appreciate it. We need to give more credit where credit's due, on this show. 'Cause people, I think, are sending, are you getting donations, Corey, on a weekly basis? I mean,
Yeah, well,
trickling in here and
this
there.
This past week, I don't know why, Todd. I get so just kind of, I'm not good at fundraising. I feel,
yeah, it's difficult.
You know, honestly, it's just something I got to get used to.
Right.
I wish that the fundraising part was not a component of the show. I'm incredibly grateful for the fundraising that we, you know, the people that donate. I just am incredibly grateful for it. I just got to get over my own little thing
on
it.
I think there's a simple way for us to solve that is just include me on the PayPal account, you know, somehow where I can just log in and just, I'll just roll with who's, you know, who's
perfect. I'll have that set up.
That's all I need to do. I mean, as long as I can see the list, I can nail it. And I'm fairly adept at asking for money. I've done it many, many times for very many projects around here.
So yeah,
it's not a problem. But to the point of where does some of that support go? It goes to help. Corey, you paid a guy to do that stinger at the end, the animation. I mean, we need to promote. We need to be good marketers of this idea of Article 4 state citizenship, especially with this great opportunity of Californians wanting to secede from the union now that Trump's president.
Oh my gosh! I would have never thought that the potential subscriber base for Agenda 31 could include so many liberals and Democrats.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a liberal or a Democrat and you're really upset, you want to secede, you want to make Trump's life as difficult as possible, and you want to have some real teeth behind it without, you know, risking yourself going to jail, you need to investigate Article 4 citizenship.
And
I mean,
it's
the
not,
framers made it difficult for the president. They wanted to make it really difficult for the president. And if you give up that, you know, that playing card, if you give up that Article 4 citizenship and decide to play with the playing cards that the president's going to hand you, you're at a disadvantage. So if you want to secede from the union, if you want to make Trump's life as difficult as possible because you're on the other side, boy, Agenda 31 is the show for you.
I like that. I like that playing card analogy. That's good. And just to be clear for anybody new to the topic here, Article 4 state citizenship is not about seceding from the union. The visceral emotional reaction to the Trump win of we got to get out of the union, we don't want to have him have power over us, also known as secession, is the opportunity to have a dialogue about self-determination. Low risk, high reward. You're disenfranchised. You can't stand the fact that Trump's in so-called power. Take his power away by not being on the federal plantation. The presidency was never set up to have a direct pipeline to the people in terms of power and control. The people were supposed to have authority over the states, and the states had authority over the presidency. And that still exists on paper, in reality, if you will. It's just not fulfilled, because not enough of us have stepped up to fulfill it. And it does take a groundswell of people to fulfill things. And as we've seen from this Brexit vote, and we've seen from the Trump vote, that groundswells can turn the tide. And maybe we can have a groundswell of Article 4 state citizens emerge, so that the next time a cop decides to stop you on your bike because your light isn't bright enough, and the cop throws you up against the car, and he finds out that you're an Article 4 state citizen, he leaves you the hell alone, because he knows that there's been proof of concept prior to this where a cop has done that to an Article 4 state citizen and the cop got his ass handed to him.
Well, I'd say he'd probably, yeah, get his ass handed to him. What's required at this point in time, I believe, is a case, an order from the Supreme Court or a judgment from the Supreme Court that goes a little bit different than it did in Birchfield. You know, they brought up that, hey, the Fourth Amendment, there are no exceptions to it. It's just whether or not the Fourth Amendment applies. And I would contend that Birchfield was a 14th Amendment citizen. Therefore, he did not have access to the Bill of Rights, which is, you know, the Fourth Amendment is one of the Bill of Rights. So the Fourth Amendment in Birchfield did not apply. They just made a policy decision on just how far they could go. But if the Fourth Amendment applied, boom, he would have won. And there probably would have been very significant penalties to pay as far as the state is concerned. But the attorney for Birchfield was, in my mind, completely lost. He had no clue what the court was talking about, was kind of stammering and struggled through that softball that the Supreme Court was handing him. And, you know, it's going to take others to be able to get into the Supreme Court who have established a standing under Article 4. and you know, be able to test that. So if that test comes back, I think there are plenty of indications that the Supreme Court is, you know, begging for somebody to come in with that argument so that they don't have to make policy decisions anymore. They can make decisions based on constitutional terms.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
On the No Agenda show, Corey, recently, Dvorak and Curry were, that's on noagendashow.com, also heard at noagendastream.com, which you may be listening to this playback of Agenda 31 at noagendastream.com, and we greatly appreciate all the Gitmo slaves tuning into us at that stream, and thank you for listening to us there. We were played back on Sundays after their show that starts roughly around 11 a.m. Central, ends usually around 2 p.m. Central, and you hear Agenda 31 shortly thereafter. Agenda 31, I mean, on that show, on that stream, I should say. But recently, Dvorak played a clip of these cops.
Is this a real show?
Whoa.
Oh, sorry about that. Wow. That was me.
Wow, that was interesting. He played a clip of a beatdown that these cops gave a guy who with a dog. Literally, like, the dog was biting him for a minute, and they were kicking him. He was in the hospital for 2 weeks. His ribs are broken. And it turns out it was, quote, the wrong guy. And I think this was in, I can't remember where it was. Is it in Portland or Washington? Regardless, Dvorak's spin on this, his deconstruction of it, if you will, was his frustration with the fact that this guy is going to sue the city, and he's going to win. And he's going to win a couple to $5 million was the estimate, you know, and because it's just completely, they were completely in the wrong. And it dawned on me as he was going on this rant about this, I think you and I have touched on this briefly. He was saying, you know, the taxpayers are the ones paying for the transgression. The cop doesn't suffer. He got suspended. Yeah, he might lose his job, maybe, but he's not going to have to dig in his pocket and pay $5 million restitution. The taxpayers will. So there's a shield there, and that's because they're inside this administrative division. That's what I assert. And in your view, Corey, can an Article IV citizen go after the cop individually and really cause some accountability? Is that the difference?
I do think that, one, it's not going to happen with an attorney. I don't know. I can't explain it other than I think the education system in the legal universe messes with the brains of every single attorney, and it prevents them from even coming up with a concept of personally holding bad actors in government accountable. So it's going to take somebody who can bring a case on their own. But I believe, and I'm certainly doing my best to structure my case and my pending federal filing, which I hope to have done here, you know, fairly soon, is to hold bad actors personally accountable. A good example of that, of my attempt in holding bad actors personally accountable, was my complaint filed against Judge Frisco and Attorney Abrielle, I forgot her last name, where she's a prosecutor and he is the controlling judge or the chief judge for the Downey Superior Court. I watched them in court coordinate efforts to deny Gabriella exculpatory evidence. So not that I expect anything to happen at this level from the complaint. I have no faith in the California Judicial Council. The FBI, they're not going to say anything, and I'm not familiar with the FBI ever doing anything based on a complaint received about a judge. So it's not like I've got a lot of confidence that that complaint is actually going to result in anything other than creating a record. But in the right court, I think the ability to really just drive a freight train right through the personal life of somebody who is a bad actor wearing a government costume is certainly possible.
I think it's an important distinction, and that, you know, how can the bad actors be held personally accountable? And before I say what Stuart said in the chat room here, the other nuance on Dvorak's rant that I thought was worth noting is the chief of police and the media and the powers that be all said they had the wrong guy. That's why this was wrong. So that presumes that if it was the right guy, having the dog bite him for a minute and kick and break his ribs and put him in the hospital for 2 weeks would have been okay.
Right, right.
We had the wrong guy. If we had the right guy, we could have beat the shit out of him. I mean, that's what I got out of that dialogue. Think about that for a second. That's the nature of federal citizenship. You're accused. They open up an investigation on the fly, on the street. You made a wrong move. You put your hand in your pocket wrong. You didn't follow a specific order. We have the right guy. We can beat the shit out of you. No problem. Tech dogs, go.
Exactly. There's another example. I'm trying to look it up right now in Florida, where SWAT had the wrong. They got a warrant, but they went to the wrong house with that warrant, and nothing happened. They kicked in the door. I think they shot someone.
There's plenty of examples of this.
Here it is. I mean, what they're doing is criminal activity because they don't care where the reason why they don't care is, I would propose that they probably don't even need a warrant. That if they were to test a SWAT team just going out into a home that they claim is in the United States and nobody rebuts it, that they could do the same type of thing without a warrant. And what they did in Miami, I wrote to the Miami-Dade Police Department.
I tried to contact
homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
And, nobody wanted to hear that. Hey, wait a minute. These people who were victims of a nasty SWAT raid where SWAT just went to the wrong house, those officers, in my opinion, they should never, every single one of them, it doesn't matter if who gave the order. If you're going out on a warrant, you should know the address of where you're going and confirm that you're going to the right house personally. Because if you get it wrong, you show up and beat somebody's door down and walk into their house with guns, I think you should go to prison. You know, like, it's a huge deal. When I was in the insurance business, if I did something wrong, there were huge penalties to pay because you're dealing with somebody's money. Well, police are carrying guns and wearing badges, and if they do something wrong, they should be held accountable for it. And the sloppiness of that particular warrant was very frustrating to me. But, nobody pushed it. So they got away with it. They're all still on the force. And like, oh, if we screw up, the taxpayer will cover it.
Your efforts are to, as we talked about in last episode, a proof of concept. This is what we're pursuing on Agenda 31 from the plaintiff side, not the defendant side. It's a shift in tactic or strategy, however you want to look at it. And we're loath to reveal too many details because in this adversarial engagement that we're in with GovCo, we know they're listening. We don't want to, telegraph anything. What can you share with listeners, time frame wise, support you need? What can we do to help?
Well, so I wrote to one of seven attorneys who had access to the records for my most recent case, have not gotten a response from her as far as getting copies of all the discovery that the defense side had. It's a combination, Todd, of just trying to keep my head above water. My son got married last week.
Yeah.
And so there's been some distractions.
Sure. That's good. That's a good distraction.
It's really being able to, oh, great. I mean, fantastic. I'll cover that in just a second. Yeah. But, I'm like everybody else, just trying to keep my head above water, financially here in Los Angeles. It's a challenge to live as an Article 4 citizen and be engaged in this fight, the amount of time that it takes, and then also make a living. So, there's a bit of the challenge. I don't know if there's anything anybody can actually do at the moment. It's really putting down my case when you go into federal court, which this is a federal action that I'll be moving this case to. The rules are very different. I think the rules actually favor a citizen plaintiff in federal court way more than they do in state court. But the action in federal court is, well, I'm sure that there's people who are familiar with the show and familiar with the concepts that they know exactly what it is that I'm doing here. But I am worried about telegraphing that at the moment.
Sure.
And so once that's filed, then it'll be very clear on, why it was filed the way it was and in exactly which court it was filed in. We'll make all of that available. I'm thinking a time frame of another 2 to 3 weeks. I should have the initial filing, which will literally be probably 90% of the case. I'll have that completed. And the struggle is to take very complicated issues and boil it down to something that is very, very simple to where it's a yes, no answer. And that just takes time, and being able to sit down and focus on this is, you know, just, it takes the hours to do it. I've got, you know, multiple projects going on, but I do think that certainly before the end of the year, I'd hope to have this in before the end of November, but I'm not confident with where I have it right now. So I'll need to reread it and make the adjustments. And
two things come to mind, what we just said. One, it reminds me of my conversation this is probably 3 or 4 years ago, after when I first got to know you, Corey, and I ran into a former classmate of mine. He was a senior when I was a freshman in college, and he had become a judge in Missouri. And I gave him the quick overview of this state citizenship versus federal citizenship, and he looked at me and he said, "Yeah, makes sense. I get it. It's gonna be very hard to have a judge hear that and understand it, though."
Yes,
he acknowledged it right off the bat that it was plausible and made sense. So that was one of the things that gave me confidence to continue this path with you, was that dialogue I had with that individual. The second thing that comes to mind is this is another, you know, great, you know, reason. My wife Kathleen on the last show, you know, reached out and tried to, you know, extol the virtues of supporting you financially. How much? Think about this for a second. What do you spend $31 on in a given month, listeners? I mean, what do you spend on that is somewhat, you know, for lack of a better term, wasteful or, you know, tertiary or fleeting, if you will? Pick your, you know, habit or your discretion or whatever it might be. And can you divert $31 to Corey? And if we had 100 people doing $31 a month, that would be a nice little nut every month to give Corey the cushion he needs to make this a hyper focus. Instead of trying to get to it on the side, around trying to, you know, trying to bring some scratch in. And I mean, that doesn't seem to be very unattainable to me. We have over 1,000 unique listeners every episode to this podcast based on our podcast stats. I'm sure there's more based on, you know, people that might download it that, you know, aren't getting registered, or the YouTube videos that you post, Corey, of some of our shows that I'm not counting. So it doesn't seem unlikely that this ask of joining the Compass Club for $3,100 a month would be hard to attain. Let's give that a shot. Let's try and get that accomplished by year's end in 16. If we're going to have some turnarounds in 16, hell, if the Cubs can win the World Series, we can get 100 people donating $31 a month to Corey. Don't you think? I think so.
I agree. Yeah.
I think so. And so you can go to the website agenda31.org and you can donate right there at the top. It says support and subscribe. And subscription is complimentary to subscribe to the blog, and that gets you the updates that I send out an hour before the show starts, but at least gets you the updates that we are broadcasting and when. It also gets you access to the common law ID section of the website. That's complimentary. You don't have to subscribe to the blog in order to donate. You can just do it with PayPal. You can do that through your PayPal account if you have one, or you can use a regular credit card or debit card through PayPal to make that donation. You can do it one time, or you can sign up for a recurring monthly $31. It's very simple. We encourage you to go do that. If you listen to other podcasts, you know, ones that come to mind are Greg Carlwood's Higher Side Chats. Phenomenal content. He's built a phenomenal model, and he's able to produce great content because he can focus on it. And we want Corey to produce great results in holding this government accountable with low risk, high reward, because he can focus on it. And that's why you need to go support Corey now at agenda31.org. Please click on the support button and sign up.
I gotta say, Todd, thank you. And you know, Jennifer and I were in Texas when we got to listen to you and Kathleen doing a fantastic show about voter fraud and the fractional voting. The service we had was a little bit spotty. There was a few areas that the show dropped off, but I went back and listened to the entire show again. And you know, it just felt like, from Kathleen, it just felt like a big warm hug. It was really just awesome. And I think we actually probably should add a new tagline to the show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, well, a couple of 3.5s that landed 10s talking about complex political issues.
3.5s that landed 10s. I missed it. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, that would, the 3.5 would refer to you and I, and Jennifer and Kathleen would be the 10.
Okay, I'm still not, you're talking about fractional voting? Like,
No, I'm just talking about a couple of under average looking guys landing a couple of hot,
yes,
smart, intelligent, yes, beautiful women.
Wilfs, so. I call them. Wilfs.
Wilfs, yes. So anyway,
oh, yeah.
I just
absolutely, well,
really enjoyed Kathleen being on the show, and hopefully the fans don't mind me coming back.
We got some good, of course not. We got some good feedback from a couple of listeners, and I was glad. It was really good to have her on there, and we've been a team for a long time. I did publish an article in the River City's Reader a few days after we were on the air. I wrote it up. It went to press the day of the election, actually. It went to press that morning, so I didn't know what the outcome was going to be. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes. And it includes the outreach I did to the county auditor, the exchange I had with one of the world's foremost experts on computer science and voting equipment, Dr. Jones, out of University of Iowa. And I'm pretty happy with the piece, and it's out there now. It's in the Quad Cities, where we distribute the River Cities Reader, and it's calling to question the integrity of elections. And I think it's going to be a head scratcher for some, going, wow, is Trump won? Is the Reader or Todd saying that Hillary got screwed and we should recount the votes? Is that, you know, as long as people engage, I don't care what their reason they engage is, we should still be looking at the integrity of this election equipment if you think it matters to you. So you sent a note to me, one of our listeners sent to you, Corey, about consent.
Yeah.
And it reads, DMV, Social Security, IRS are voluntary, not sacred ordinations. What is sacred ordination? Where did that come from?
You know, I'm not sure. That's Brit, you know, Brittany, by the way, who's very active. We get lots of messages from her, and she's, you know, always sending information and researching. She, in fact, sent the equivalent of a warm hug after listening to Kathleen's time on the show last week. But I kind of took that to mean that, you know, these are not sacred items. These are not institutions.
Holy orders.
If they were to go away, it doesn't mean the collapse of the country. The country would work fine without Social Security. It might be difficult in that transition period, or if you don't have a driver's license. It doesn't mean all of a sudden everybody can just go nuts on the roads. That's just not the function of these, you know, contracts that people find it very difficult to even imagine living without. Yet the fundamentals that exist within these contracts are exactly what deny you access to the Bill of Rights.
And she goes on, nor are they lawful obligations. In law, the word obligation means a binding contract. And to have a binding contract, don't you have to have full disclosure? We ought to be able to invalidate them if we choose. Now, we've had this discussion before, and it's a very succinct, you know, argument and position that Brittany took there. But, and this is what Kathleen's been saying for years, you know, it's not a valid contract if we don't have full disclosure. You know, if you don't understand the terms and they're not disclosed. But that doesn't work. It is coercion of the highest order.
Absolutely.
We've gone over
but
this.
But there is a portion, and this is kind of tipping my hand of where things are going, but there is a portion within the court system that is a constitutional court system that has not been addressed. It has not been the idea of consent. I cannot find any legal decisions in modern history that allow for this, you know, these Social Security, income tax, driver's license, right, any of it, you name it, that allow for those to continue to be in force and binding on somebody after they have removed consent. There's plenty to say that there has to be consent to open it. And in fact, it was the Townsend Maternity Act, I think it was what it was called, which predated Social Security, it was found to be unconstitutional because it just applied to everybody. It was not a it failed on the issue of consent. So the government just went back and reworked it and came up with Social Security that you have to consent to participate in Social Security. And that consent, if we were to take somebody who lived during the time of the Revolutionary War and they were active, the number one book read during that time was Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England, or the Common Laws of England. That is the law, you know, the law of the land is the Common Laws of England. If you were to take somebody who was aware and knew how the Common Laws of England operated at the time of the Revolutionary War, and you had them sign up for Social Security going through the whole process, I think that person would absolutely understand instantly the consensual nature of it, because during that time, there were people who had contracts that were called specialty contracts, where you literally became somebody else's property. You would be under contract to maybe a rich landowner, essentially a voluntary form of slavery. That was widespread and persisted, you know, all the way up until, you know, the early 1900s was very common. And what happened was those contracts, those specialty contracts, have kind of been done away with, even though they used to be in newspapers. I mean, there were newspaper articles that I've read where if you just go back through history, it's fascinating to just pick your state, look at old newspaper articles, and just read exactly what was in that newspaper on, you know, like you might go November 12th of 1865 and see if you can find what were the headlines that day. And you'll find articles written about people lining up to to do something that had to do with who they had that specialty contract with. It's just very fascinating.
That sounds much more difficult than going to Facebook, Corey, and looking at my feed.
It is very different, but I mean, I find it fascinating. I can spend hours just reading old newspaper articles because you find such rich history in those newspapers. And California is very interesting. I mean, to me, it really helps answer a lot of questions of the mindset of people for, you know, political events that occurred that today, you know, we look at those political events like the 1879 Constitution, we see that in our own modern bubble, but that's not what it was in 1878. That's not our mindset today is not what the mindset was of Californians in 1878.
Well, Corey, you are helping change mindsets with your efforts, and you sent me a screenshot of a text back and forth with a friend in San Diego, a new listener, I think, of the show. I'm not sure. He wrote, "I honestly didn't get it until I read your appeal case, and it came together real fast. You were very smart. It takes time to go back and read all this, and nobody really wants to read it. It has become the lost keys to liberty, and you are one of the few who has rediscovered it." And then you talked about Blackstone's common laws and effectively what you just said here on the air. And then he wrote, "It's why I'm grateful that you have shared your knowledge on YouTube. It's really got me turned around now, and I feel a lot better about myself as well. With great power also comes great responsibility as well. So I only use it as a defensive safeguard and not offensively. It's like being a Jedi Knight and having the power of the Force." Well, that's good. I mean,
you need to pick up your brain and read a book.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And we appreciate that update on your status on this, because that proof of concept is going to be critical. And we need to probably put a link to Blackstone's on our resources on our website as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If Blackstone's is referenced, it's somewhere around 21 or 22 times, something like that, in the Federalist Papers. That was an incredibly important resource when the framers were putting the country together. And the abandonment of that foundation of information by the average American, who just discounts it and will say, "Oh, that's old, that doesn't apply." Well, that's just not true. It's, you know, those laws are the foundation of the country, and it's not changed. That is how the country interfaces with its population, is first the Common Laws of England. And under the Common Laws of England, the rules are very different than what we have been brought up to believe the rules are. And it allows for, rather than being a voluntary servant to a rich plantation owner, now the government has just made everybody a voluntary servant through word trickery to the federal government. And in that realm, in that bubble, the common laws of England don't apply because the common laws of England are outside of that that bubble. So you don't really see it, but they are there. And the way that you are subject to the federal government in such a direct manner, where the president can issue an executive order and it can have a direct effect on your life, is directly because the average person does not understand that the common laws of England are applicable, and that it is through those laws that you're able to pledge yourself as property to the federal government.
Well, Stuart's writing some interesting things in the chat room there about claim versus complaint, and we it's been on our punch list for many weeks, and we just need to circle back to it. I need to do a little more show prep on complaint versus claim. The short version being that if you have a proper claim, then you can access the common laws in the state court because it becomes your court as an Article IV state citizen, I think is what Stuart's saying.
Yeah, I think I've heard this concept before. I remember, Stuart, forget his last name, but he was with Rossum Milk, the one in Venice where you know he was raided, the milkman, and this idea of claim versus complaint was proposed by a couple from Hawaii who I forgot their names, but anyway, it got him in a ton of trouble. And
him being who?
And Stuart.
Oh,
the
Stuart in our chat room.
What's that?
The same Stuart in our chat room?
No, not the same Stuart in our chat room.
Okay, all right.
It was Stuart from Rossum Milk.
Got
Let me
it.
Get the last
okay.
name.
Okay, I'm with you now. I'm catching on. No, don't worry about it. And I just need to understand what you're talking about.
Okay, so it could have been James Stuart. I'm sorry, it's not Stuart. It's James Stuart from Rossum Foods. The use of this, and it could be different than what Stuart in the chat room is referring to, obviously, but the overall concept, I at the time spent a lot of time reading it, and I found that it didn't have any effect in the state courts here. So I would love if Stuart in the chat room can provide cases where this has been successful, that would be very helpful.
Yeah. info@agenda31.org is the email.
Yes, info@agenda31.org. Would love to see some real cases, but I don't want to sound like, oh, I'm just dismissing what Stuart in the chat room is saying. Those are valid points, I believe, but I'm not convinced that they're applicable in the state court, nor am I at all convinced that it's possible for you to have the common law of England as it applies to the several states apply in the Superior Court of California, because even though those courts refer to themselves as a court of record and they refer the common law and that they are a court of record, that they call themselves that, the case that we talked about a few shows back says that, look, they're allowed to call themselves a court of record, but they're not a court of record. And one of the ways that you can point out that they're not a court of record and that they don't operate under the common laws of England is they don't have the authority to naturalize citizens. In California in 1850, the district and county courts in California, they had the authority to naturalize citizens into citizenship. They would become California citizens. When those courts were abandoned and falsely abolished by just a simple proclamation of an attorney bureaucrat, and then the superior courts were established under the 14th Amendment, they called themselves courts of record. And if you just look at kind of the surface information, it would look like the superior courts are the equivalent of the county court and the local district courts of the state, because they intentionally worded it to make it seem like the Superior Court replaced those, but they did not. The Superior Court is not a court of record and does not have the authority to naturalize citizens, and there were no citizens naturalized after 1879.
I think what might be asserted in the chat room is that if you are able to establish yourself as a state citizen and not a federal citizen, that you might be able to have access to those courts. But I think we need to explore that further. I would venture to say that James Stewart had a driver's license.
Well, of course. Well, yeah. James Stewart had a driver's license.
Yeah.
I helped him as far as just proofing his letter to the DMV where he rescinded his driver's license. And he mailed that to the DMV. The DMV then mailed his license card back to him with an unsigned letter saying that, you know, you can't leave.
Yeah. Yeah. We know that. We know that one very well.
And he was facing 31 felony counts. I mean, he was under such incredible pressure. And, you know, I really feel for the guy. He just ended up he started grasping at things that didn't make sense. And what got him in a lot of trouble was these people from Hawaii that, you know, they had quite a following, and they were kind of deconstructing the complaint and saying that James can file some paperwork and then not even show up to court. And I remember telling James that, hey, if it were me, I would show up, you know. And so he ended up spending 2.5 months in jail unnecessarily with his bond revoked.
And when we started Agenda 31, actually I think it was even before then, when we did the Common Sense Revisited show on RBN, we talked about James Stewart and Ross and Milk quite a bit. That was a big deal. And
huge.
More evidence of the coercive discretionary nature of GovCo coming in and telling you that you can't drink milk without it being pasteurized. Heaven forbid. We didn't even get to the marijuana initiatives in the states. Corey, we'll talk about that next show, perhaps.
Yeah,
we appreciate everybody tuning in today to our show. This is episode 106 of Agenda 31. This has been Todd McGreevy and Corey Ibe, and we always challenge everybody. You have been listening, by the way, to the lowest risk, highest reward podcast in the universe, and we always challenge everybody to ask themselves, what is your strategy to make a difference?
I know you.
31.